Lace up your boots and grab your mouthguards. It's time for the Rugby Wrap, the podcast about all things Western Force and the game we love.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Wrap, proudly brought to you by Leap Strategies. My name is Mick Collis and joining me is the play target shooting wallaby, number 735, Mitch Hardy. Mitch, good to see you.
Good to see you. Gents, yeah, I was channeling my inner Michael Diamond tonight, but yeah, alas, I don't think I'm going to have dual representation representing Australian clay target shooting.
What were your stats?
Two out of 15, Mick. Two out of 15. Bit like my tipping.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no good. But a good experience. And the Darwin Clay Target Club were really friendly people. And yeah, it was excellent. It was really good.
Good. And then fresh off a big night in the corporate hospitality tent, former Western Force hooker Heath Tessman. Tess, good to see you.
Oh, good to see you as well. Yeah. What was it? It was a bit of Korean fried chicken with a sweet chili barbecue sauce on Saturday night.
There you go.
Success in the trough and a success on the field as well, which I'm sure we'll cross to later.
Yep, we certainly will. Now, we put the call out a couple of weeks ago for someone to come on and explain in plain English the situation at the Rebels, and thankfully someone did. So Daniel Bredenkamp is an executive director at Pitcher Partners, and he knows liquidation like Heath Tessman knows buffets, and he joins us now. So Daniel, thanks for your time on the Rugby Wrap.
Yeah, thank you very much. Happy to be with you, boys.
Now, you sent through some figures. The whole situation seems to be a case of he said, she said. We know the Rebels owed $23 million. So a couple of dot points, which I'll go through, then we'll throw it to you. So the company, which I assume is the Rebels, had a participation agreement for Super Rugby, which expired on the 31st of December last year. But that could be extended if the Rebels complied with their obligations. Rugby Australia said that they didn't meet those obligations. Rugby Australia had the ability to become the sole employer and serve notice to that effect on the 1st of February and started paying the wages in super. Rugby Australia and the directors had different positions on who employed the players. That was no one understood who actually employed the players. Administrator was called in. So the Rebels directors said that the company at all times was controlled by Rugby Australia and said there was a shortfall of funding by Rugby Australia. But Rugby Australia said they only became aware of the Rebels' financial position when the Rebels defaulted on an ATO payment. Income between 2021 and 2023 was $28 million, but the operating expenses were $43 million. So even if the Rebels got that shortfall that they're talking about, they still lost $8.5 million in 2 years. And Rugby Australia funding contributed to more than half of that, sometimes as high as 63% of the Rebels' income. So, Daniel, it's an absolute mess. We appreciate you explaining it to us. What's going on?
Yeah, Mick, good summary there. I think the long and the short of it is that, one, the directors traded this company, and clearly from the numbers that I looked at, that even with Rugby Australia putting in whatever they needed to put in, there was never enough money in this. You know, they break it down, and that's why, you know, I looked at those numbers on how much Rugby Australia really contributed. So the problem is that if you run a company in a PTY limited like they were doing, if a company goes into liquidation, you as a director can be held personally liable for it. So there's two parts to that. So for the directors is, one, they got what's called a director penalty notice in November, where the company liability became a personal liability for the director. So you can then, you know, go after the guy's house, the director's house, if he gets that director penalty notice from the ATO. And then if a company goes into liquidation, a liquidator, that power is only available to a liquidator. And that's why I think they were so keen to put this deed of company arrangement forward, is a liquidator can then pursue their directors for insolvent trading. And they threw some numbers of $16.3 million around. So it was, I think it was not cloak and dagger, they probably weren't publicizing all of these things, and they were working hard in the background trying to make it all work.
So that DOCA thing,
the Docker,
in,
yes, the Docker. Docker arrangement.
So is that to try and take the onus of repayment away from those directors?
Yes, in part it is. So what you normally find is that directors, especially if there's a potential for a liability like this, that they'd be normally pretty keen to put a deed of company arrangement. And as the name suggests, it's an arrangement you put to your creditors where you're saying, guys, you're not going to get 100 cents in the dollar. However, we will put in other money that's not available in the company to you under this arrangement, and you take that because you're going to get a better result than a liquidation. And then in that case, yes, the liquidator never gets appointed, so they cannot go after the directors. So fairly technical, but that's essentially, you're right, the long and the short. If that docker gets up and the creditors voted on it, then there's no chance that they can go after those directors, because the company never goes into liquidation.
So, who's at fault in the whole thing? Is anyone at fault, or is it just the fact that rugby doesn't make money and the Rebels have been spending money they don't have?
Spot on. I think that's the long and the short of it. You know, we looked at some of the player, you know, what they were playing their players, you know, and you know, just the player salaries were, you know, like 7.4 million in 2021, 7.5 in 2022, and I thought it would be high in 2023. It was only $7.2 million. So that's just the player salaries, and on top of that, you add the employees. So that's all the staff and things like that. And over the 3 years, 2021 to 2023, that went from 3 million to 3.3 to 3.8 million. So in 2023, they spent $11 million just on salary and wages. Okay, so they've not covered overheads. You know, they've not rented Amy Park. Nothing. So I think it's you know, the directors then blaming, you know, Rugby Australia, and even if you then throw in the numbers that they say Rugby Australia should have paid them, they still clearly underwater, you know, since 2021, you know, quite easily. You know, the numbers, they made a loss, even if you take into consideration what Rugby Australia should have given them, what they said, you know, they made a loss of $2 million in 2021, $3.5 million in 2022, and a $3.1 million loss in 2023. So I don't know what they were thinking. You know, I sit in front of people in this situation all the time, and you know, were they waiting for a Hail Mary or something? You know, I don't know, but clearly, I think that the director's just spending money that they did not have.
And so, Mitchell, Tess, you might know this, but I thought the salary cap was 5.5 million for Super Rugby teams, but the Rebels are spending, how much did you say, and their salary was
Over seven.
over $7 million. So
7.2, 7.5.
how's that? Is that a, have they been, not, I'm not going to call it cheating, but are they over the salary cap?
Well, me doing the maths, Mick, if you've got squads of 35 players, 35 into 7 million roughly is about $200,000 a player, which seems awfully odd. Odd amount per cap per head if you look at basing on squads of 35 contracted players, which is the model of the 30 full contract players, five rookies, which is what's under the Rupa collective bargaining agreement. If they choose to go over that 35 number, I carry a squad of 45, aka like the Force, then the organisation is then responsible for every dollar above and beyond that, and they don't get any subsidy for that. So the broadcast revenue split from Rugby Australia, and Daniel might have those numbers handy, but the broadcast revenue split is usually enough to cover your player and team-based salaries, and then you have to then fight for yourself from there on in. That's how it used to work. Whether or not it's changed over the last 10 years, not sure.
Mitch, thanks. Good summary. But I think and this is one thing that was very apparent in the report is I think the get out of jail clause, and that one is that they were, the big fight was that they said Rugby Australia did not pay for the players, the Australian contracted players, when they weren't playing for the Rebels. And that's part of this claim of this $8 million they're claiming from Rugby Australia. So having a look at the numbers, I think they, although they, you know, the it says in 2023 they paid $7.2 million for the players, they are saying Rugby Australia owed them $3.1 million in that year. So maybe that's how they got underneath the cap. So they're saying what we spent on our players is under the cap, but total amount is 7.3. However, Rugby Australia should reimburse us for the time that they weren't, you know, part of our squad, and they were work there. And that was one of the line items in the report that was very clear.
Yeah, and that comes down to how the Rugby Australia top ups work, with state and territories being responsible for us up to a certain amount of a player salary, and then anything above and beyond that is the responsibility of Rugby Australia. So player A might be getting $300,000 to play for the Rebels, and then his Rugby Australia contract might be worth $500,000. So that 200,000 gap is what Rugby Australia is responsible for, and the 300 is what the Rebels is responsible for. That would be common practice in how you structure the top end player contracts. So your high-end guys like your Taniela Tupou of this world would have a Rugby Australia contract that would have a component of the province and a component of Rugby Australia.
So Danny, where do you think this is all going to end up?
So the creditors then, and this is the whole voluntary administration process is creditor driven. So the creditors actually voted on it, and they agreed for this this docker this arrangement with the creditors. They accepted that, and the reason for that is one, it's a more certain route for them. So this the investor group, which is the directors and a gentleman by the name of Jeff, I've forgotten his name. They put forward a proposal essentially, and some high net worth individuals, where they said, we will make available this pool of funds. And I worked out the numbers. It looks like it's about $4.6 million that they've made available, where they said we will pay all of the employee entitlements, so the $1.3 million in employee entitlements. So that includes redundancies and pay in lieu of notice and annual leave that were due. And then they said we will give every creditor, including the ATO, we will give them 15 cents in a dollar. So that's another $2.3 million. And then there's a $750,000 fee for the liquidator, and the directors also chipped in $250,000. So $4.6 million. So the creditors then got a chance to vote on that, where they said, okay, guys, we can go down the liquidation route. So you, the creditors, decide on this. We can go down the liquidation route. We think you're going to get somewhere between 0 cents in the dollar, which is fairly likely, and 37.5 cents in the dollar. However, this other proposal that you then vote on, we guarantee you that you're going to get 15 cents in the dollar. This group of funds, these investors are going to put 15 cents in straight up. They're going to pay the employee their entitlements, and then they will pay you 15 cents in the dollar. And if they get up the claim against Rugby Australia, that 15 cents in the dollar goes up to 35 cents in the dollar. Okay, and anything above that 35 cents in the dollar goes to the ATO. And what this group of investors also said is, they are owed about $6.2 million that they said we will not claim. Okay, so they are a related party. There were shareholders and director loans that came in and things like that, and they said we will not put in a claim for that, because in a liquidation they said no, we want our share of that. So they then ended up saying we won't prove for that. So the pool of creditors is a lot smaller. So the pool of creditors is then only $15.5 million versus, 21.8 million dollars.
So if looking at the figures that you've looked at it, if you're an investor, would you invest in the Melbourne Rebels?
Well, on going forward, it's actually you've just taken, let's make it $15 million, $11 million worth of our taxpayer money that they didn't pay. Okay, so let's be honest about that. You've just now wiped $15.5 million worth of liabilities from your balance sheet. So and then all of a sudden you walk in and you pay them, $4.6 million for a franchise. How much is it actually worth to go forward? Because essentially the Victorian Rugby Union were the shareholders, ultimately, and now these group of investors are going to become the shareholders. So from an investment perspective, we all do this because we love the great game, the game played in heaven. That's why you guys do this. So certainly, if it's a passion and things like that, then a lot of people want to say, well, I own a rugby club, or I own a club. It's the flavor of the month now, isn't it? So I think the dollar and cents goes out the door at some stage, So but sport clubs, rugby clubs are big business. The All Blacks, they went, there's a private equity there, so there's certainly money to be made.
And is there a time limit on this whole process? Because I mean, a lot of the Rebels players are off contract. They don't know what they're doing next year.
So there is a time limit for that, but I guess it comes back to, where you started with what is this arrangement that Rugby Australia essentially, gives the license to the Rebels. Are they going to give it back to them? Because essentially at this stage, Rugby Australia is running the Rebels. They're picking up the bill from the 1st of January. They're paying for the doctors and the food and everything at this stage. So the question is whether they will now give the license back to the Melbourne Rebels, Pty Limited club, which I'm assuming were part of the discussions. I don't think Rugby Australia is in the business of running a super club. They're in the business of running the Wallabies. So I think they would have been those discussions in the background for these guys to come on in. So with a level of certainty that at least they can, continue to run the Rebels next year.
Wow. Well, look, it's an absolute mess. We do appreciate you explaining it to us. Let's hope they get things sorted out sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks, Daniel. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks, Daniel.
So that was Daniel Bredenkamp. Geez, it's a mess, isn't it?
Yeah, well, look, as far as people coming in and owning it, if it's a good idea or not, like I still remember when the Rebels first started, Harold Mitchell, the late media buyer, he was the guy that fronted a lot of the money. And I remember walking through a little laneway down in Melbourne as I was discovering the area. There's a little bookstore there, and I'd love a good book and a coffee. And I walked in, and Harold Mitchell's biography was there. And I thought, well, this guy's put all this money into us. I might buy his book and have a read and learn about him. I think I got to the third chapter. He set the scene. I talked about what he did as a kid and growing up. And it was chapter three where he spoke about, and this book was released before he was involved in the Rebels, but he spoke about you should never, ever buy a sports team. You should never get involved to put your money into it because, especially if it's a sport you love, you end up falling out of love with it because all of a sudden it loses its appeal from that pure side of it, becomes a business, it becomes a chore. And I think he lasted about another 12 months.
Because that was that before that was before he got involved in the team,
That was before he got
and then he
involved
went
in
and
the
got
team.
involved.
So, yeah. And he went and got involved. He talked about how obviously he had some other high net wealth individuals who were his friends who thought they could, or not thought, they did dabble in the sports market and how their relationship with the sport changed pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
He's like, never do it. And then I don't know, he found himself in it
Wow.
and he did. So it was, I don't know, it's just a word of warning, I feel.
Yeah.
Anyone who's going to be jumping in.
But yeah, let's hope it's just got to get it. It's got to get sorted. It's crazy. Well, we've had a few favourites at the Western Force over our time, and our guest tonight is right up there. He was one of the most consistent performers during his time in the West, and we remain perplexed as to why he was never invited to one of the Wallaby camps. This Saturday night, he'll be turning out for the Waratahs against his old club. And it'll be terrific to have him back in Perth. So, Fergus Lee Warner, great to have you back on the Rugby Wrap.
It's good to be back. It's been a year or two, hasn't
It has been. So, I was going to say, for the listeners, can you fill us in on what you've done since you left the force and how you ended up at the Tars?
Yeah, so I left the force in 2022, about June, I think it was, June, July. Went over to Worcester Warriors in the Premiership in England. And
3-year
then after,
contract over there, wasn't it, Ferg?
yeah, signed my life away, put the feet up, set for life.
Go
And
collect some
then,
pounds.
pardon?
Go collect some pounds, yeah.
Go collect some pounds. And then, yeah, 2 months into my stint, I was jobless. The club went under. The two owners sort of, I don't know, ran the place into the ground. And then, yeah, we were sort of left. I was one of the lucky ones. I got picked up with three other fellas. We got picked up and pretty much instantly moved straight down to Bath. And I stayed there for the last sort of 18 months playing there. And then from there, the opportunity at the Tars popped up. And I mean, I'm from New South Wales. So, I always wanted to play for the Tars growing up as a young kid. And I love my time at the Force. But yeah, that opportunity came up. And I thought, I've had a good time in the UK. I may as well come back and have a run around for the Tars.
Did they approach you, Ferns, or did you approach them?
They sort of my situation sort of with the salary cap in the Prem, Bath had sort of spent all their money. So yeah, I sort of was looking for a club and I'm pretty sure my agent got in contact with the Tars and they were looking, so they sort of teed it up. But yeah, I was sort of tossing up whether to stay over in the UK or come back. And I thought, the Tars was a club I'd wanted to play for
Yeah.
growing up, so I thought I'd just come back and yeah, do that.
And how are you enjoying your time in the blue jersey and being with the Waratahs?
Yeah, I loved it. It's
Well,
been
should we separate? How's he enjoying his time
yeah,
back
with
in
the latter.
Sydney to how is he enjoying his time in the
Yeah, look, the results haven't gone great since I got back. I actually left Bath and we were on top of the table, so it's a bit different, but in terms of my rugby and being here in this environment, yeah, really enjoying it. I mean, most footy environments are pretty enjoyable, as
Yeah.
Tess would know. So,
Yeah.
different bunch of fellas, but yeah, results obviously haven't gone our way, but enjoying it.
What
You
if we
know.
take a step back, sorry, Ferg, you go over to Worcester for 3 years and it all falls apart there, unfortunately. But then it's a case of falling up, isn't it? Going over to the UK and thinking you're going to spend some time in Worcester to then spending a good year and a half of your life in Bath. It's a cracking place. Did you enjoy your time in Bath as well?
Yeah, Bath was pretty amazing. I mean, Worcester, if any of the listeners have been over there, Worcester's a bit of a sort of working class little town in the West Midlands. I actually really loved it because Worcester, we were sort of, we had a few big names, but our squad wasn't like littered with like big international players, and we just sort of were a hardworking team. And it was just, I don't know, I really enjoyed it. And then unfortunately that obviously went tits up, and then Bath was like the opposite end of the spectrum. It's like, I think it's got the richest people from England living in a city. They have all their sort of houses away from London. They all go up there on the weekends and things. So it's like a picturesque city, and they have rugby mad. I mean, every game we played, it would be a sellout. And yeah, like you'd walk down to the stadium and the whole streets would be lined with fans, like walking you down to the game on the Saturday or the Friday. So yeah, it's a bit different to traveling out to Six Ways at Worcester, but it was really it, I enjoyed both. But yeah, it was sort of being at Worcester, it was like we're just a bunch of hard workers. And then you go down to Bath and you've got like the Finn Russells and the Ollie Lawrences and things, and it's a different kettle of fish down there.
Oh, but bigger change rooms at Worcester, though, surely.
Not with the smell. The sewer used to come up the pipe in the shower every I don't think the owners paid to clean the sewer. So every sort of Monday, Tuesday, when no one had been in the building, it would like over the weekend you'd come in and the whole bottom of the building would smell like sewerage. It was pretty crook. But yeah, it was a bit different. Like rocking up there, we had no kit. The first, because obviously the owners hadn't paid the kit bill, so I roll in thinking, what's this big club in England? And there was no kit for me. I was wearing the last year's kit, and then you go down to Bath and you get given like three bags of kit, and it's like just different ball game. But yeah, it was fun.
A lot of differences though as well. But now you're back playing rugby, and I was like, what was the big difference playing up there as well, even when you were at Bath, to coming back here? Like different coaching styles, different philosophies. Like the value on set piece very different in the Northern Hemisphere
Yeah,
to down
it's
here.
like very set piece dominant. I'd say like just the caliber of players. Like I feel like Super Rugby, especially in Australia, the players are a lot younger over here, whereas over there, squads are a lot older. There's a lot more experience in the squads. That's one difference I've taken away. Like obviously there's still good players in Oz, but in terms of like the numbers over in
Where they
Europe,
are in their career.
Yeah, they're sort of later on in their career. And yeah, probably just the money, like the money poured into the Premiership. Obviously, there's way more population in England. So game day experiences are just on another level, things like that. But yeah, I'd say definitely in terms of the rugby, set pieces a big thing over there. You do a lot of box kicking. And especially in the winter where it's either freezing or raining, there's not too much running rugby. So your set piece needs to be pretty pinpoint. And you do a lot of standing in the middle of the field while the nines and the tens go into a kick battle. We sort of get booed by the crowd, but that's just the way the game's played.
Oh, well, that's good. That's prepared you for coming back to play in front of the Sydney crowd for the Waratahs, being booed by your crowd
Yeah.
anyway.
Yeah, it took me a few weeks to get used to running again, I'll tell you that. Like came back
That's
from a pre-season in Bath was pretty crazy. Worcester was tough, but the pre-season at Bath was nothing like what we did this year at the Tars. I'd sort of forgotten that sort of hard work. You get, I think because they're bigger bodies over there, they look after you. But yeah, it definitely took me a few weeks, especially when we ran out at Suncorp in that first game and it was like raining but boiling hot. The lungs were pretty busted after about 5 minutes, so took me a few weeks to get used to running around again at that sort of pace.
So the Tars, they've had a terrible run of injuries. I think 11 front rowers have gone down. Currently on the bottom of the ladder. How is the mood in the camp at the Waratahs?
Yeah, mood's fine. It's not really, I don't know, I know we haven't really been getting the results. We've had a couple of close losses, but the mood stayed the same pretty much the whole year. And I know when I was at the Force, like there was times where we'd go through a lot of losses and we all stayed really tight as a group. I don't feel like we have a fallout with each other. It just sort of each week becomes a new challenge and you don't really dwell on the losses. You just obviously know they're there in the background, but each week you obviously go out and you want to win. So definitely as a playing group, we haven't fallen apart with anyone.
Because apparently Tess keeps ringing Darren Coleman saying that he's available to beat him.
DC keeps calling me.
You'd be ready to play this weekend, would you?
He looks $1 million.
Just bring I'm a size extra medium jersey now, okay? So just tell DC to pack an extra one of those.
And folks, and at the start of the year, the Tars have come out and said that Darren Coleman, he had 4 weeks to prove he should still be coaching next year. There's still no decision on that. Was that disruptive at all?
Not really, no. We sort of obviously what's going on in the background, but as I said, like each week we'd sort of it was a new challenge. I mean, things were looking good when we beat the Crusaders down in Melbourne in that game too, and then we obviously just lost by a penalty kick to the Highlanders like a week later. So things were obviously we were competing, but we just weren't sort of getting the wins. But in terms of DC and his job being on the line or whatnot, we didn't really look into that. We just sort of keep training each week, keep playing, keep trying to win, and then whatever happens, happens, I guess. We still don't know what's going on at the moment, so
Yeah, well.
yeah.
And so what do you think has been the main problem this year? You mentioned you've had some close ones, but no one would have thought you'd be on 12th spot after what, round 12?
Yeah. Probably put a finger on it. I just think I know we've some of those losses that we had were like took a lot out of us, like losing to Fiji in those conditions over there from Golden Point. Like it just sort of stings you, and just like winning becomes a habit. I feel like losing becomes a habit. Like we go over to the Canes in Wellington, like they score 3 tries in the first 20 minutes, and it's just like Groundhog Day, and it's hard to dig your way back out of them. But yeah, it's just been the season, I guess. Obviously, losing a lot of our front rowers and stuff hasn't helped, but not to make excuses, we just probably haven't executed when we've needed to. I mean, we've got the talent and we've shown that we can play good rugby in spurts, but we just probably haven't been consistent.
And then looking ahead to Saturday, what have your thoughts been on the Force this year?
Yeah, they're probably a bit like us. They've had a few close losses. They've got good depth in their squad. We know they'll be tough at Perth, like they always are travelling over there. I mean, when I was in at the Force, we knew that when a team, whenever they travelled over, it's an extra challenge. So, yeah, we know they're going to be on a high after last weekend beating Fiji convincingly. So, it should be a good battle, really.
And what are some of their strengths that you think you've got to try and counter?
We definitely think Donaldson and Beal are ones to look out for. We know they can pull things out of the hat pretty easily.
Oh, here he goes. He highlights the two former Waratahs players. Jesus.
It's funny this week. We're not allowed to call them by their nicknames because obviously they're all a lot of mates. Obviously not me because I'm in there, but bloody half their squads are Waratahs. So I think they'll be coming out with a point to prove to DC that he shouldn't have let them go. But we've got to front up and meet them, I guess.
At the battle of the back row should be with Carlo Tozzano. It's been in really good touch.
Yeah. It should be good to see Carlo out there, running around like headless chook. But yeah, there'll be a good battle there. Charlie's back, and yeah, Big Jed's gone to eight where he used to be. So
You guys looking at, is that where you think it's going to be won or lost then, Ferg? I mean, I know I'm asking another forward here, but you guys have gone, big pack, with yourself, Jed, Gamble, Lockie Swinton at six, and young Miles Amatocero as well. He's over 2 meters tall, dollar 20 or so, plus a bit more change. You guys are just going large and going to look to dominate the Force up front.
I think that's the plan, and obviously then hopefully we can provide a good back platform for the backs to hopefully run
They
over
don't need to
Donaldson
see
and
it. They
Beal.
don't need to see the ball. It's fine.
Yeah. Just run it at Donaldson and Beal. That's the game plan.
You get
So,
through
Mitch.
Donaldson, then you get to Beal at the back.
Yeah.
Mitch, do you want to talk
Nah,
to him about the backs?
no, he talked to Fergus about backs. He'd know nothing about back one play. Turn it up. No, but so Fergus, you find yourself in the tight five yet again. Where do you go to from here from a personal point of view with your game? Like, have you got a more of a longer term view where you want to be seen playing and trying to reposition yourself with a new Wallaby coach and trying to put your best foot forward? Where do you see yourself going with your rugby from here?
I mean, I played a lot of lock over in the UK. I think obviously I don't have the specifications and the profile for being an international lock. I understand that, but I feel like I played my best rugby there. I played a bit of six over there and at the Tars at the start of the year. Obviously, Swinton's been playing well, so they pushed me back to lock. But to be honest, I'm not too fast. Like, when I play six, they usually play me as like a sort of ball carrying six. I like when I play, I like to be in the action, like sort of like where a lock would play, just because I like to carry and defend. But in terms of having a set position, lock or six, it doesn't, I'm not too fast. As long as I'm playing, that's all that really matters to me.
So, Fergs, who's your pick to come last this year?
Not the
Anyone but us.
So
We're
we got
going.
four teams battling it out for eighth spot. Give us your bottom four.
I'd say Force, Drua, Moana, Crusaders.
There you
Oh,
go. So
Tars dragging that
you
last
guys are going to
final.
win. What you're saying
We're
to me is you're going to win
going all the way to
three on the trot,
finals.
three on the trot, and sneak into eighth spot. That's what you're predicting. Okay, and who out of the Aussie
Just run away.
teams, and who out of the Aussie teams do you see as the biggest threat to knock off the likes of the Hurricanes and the Chiefs this year?
I think the Brumbies, they've looked good. I know the Reds had a bit of a form slump middle of the season, and even the Rebels, they've sort of had a few good wins. But in terms of like polished performances, I feel like the Brumbies have been pretty consistent this year. We obviously came close last weekend in the wet, but in terms of the Aussie teams, I feel like if it's not us, it'll be them.
Very
All right.
good. Good,
We'll
good selection.
wait and see. Well, folks, mate, as we said, you've always been one of our favourites. Good luck on Saturday, and thanks very much for your time on the Rugby Wrap.
No worries. I'll see you there on Saturday.
Will do. Thanks, folks. So that was Fergus Lee Warner just having a bit of a chat about the Force Waratahs. It's good to see him back in Australia, although it didn't go to plan over there. It's good to have him back.
Yeah, and we didn't want to sort of push the issue about why he left in the first place to go to the UK, and I think that's probably his personal thing to share at a time that's appropriate. But certainly disappointing to see him leave the Force when he did, and disappointing to see him leave Australian rugby when he did. And but he's had a good time. He's got a few stories to tell as a result of it, and he's landed on his feet back at New South Wales rugby. So. And he's born and bred New South Wales, so he's probably got a lot to offer that setup in the Tars. Although, without going too much in the form, I still think, and he pointed out to it, he loves playing lock, but is he going to be at international standard for what they need him to be? He could be end up being a bit of a journeyman in the 23. Will he ever be a genuine first 15 starter for a setup like the Tars? I'm not sure, but. I don't think we've seen the best of him this year. I think it's going to take a little while for him to settle back into the rhythm of Australian Super Rugby or Super Rugby standards, to be honest. I think he's still playing a bit like a UK lock, and he needs to be a little bit more physical and mobile. Like the likes we saw from Darcy Swain earlier in the year, even though Darcy's sort of gone off the boil since he signed another contract. I noticed, his performance in the last 2 weeks has been a bit off. But no, Fergus, he's got a lot to offer. He's a bit of a buffhead, we need that.
Yeah. Well, look, we'll take a short break and we'll be back to take a look at Super Rugby. You're listening to the Rugby Wrap.
G'day, I'm Connor Jenkins from Leap Strategies. If hackers got into Mitch Hardy's computer, all they'd find would be old videos of his try-scoring glory.
Toad ahead here by the intercept specialist, Mitch Hardy. He did this against Wellington, and this is his second try.
But if your business has got the kind of data that's a bit more critical, that's where we step in. Leap Strategies makes your cybersecurity protection simple and as stress-free as possible. Want a hand in making your business data secure? Call Leap Strategies on 1300 77 LEAP or visit leapstrategies.com.au.
So let's talk rugby. And week 12 of Super Rugby has come and gone, and we'll just quickly have a look at some of the results, kicking off with a team that we refuse to pick because they always win when we don't, and that's the Western Force putting on a clinic to beat the Drua 48 points to 10, scored after 52 seconds after a cracking run by Jeremy Williams put Chase Tiatia in the corner. What's going on at the Western Force?
That was the question.
Not T. Tessman, the buffet.
That was the question around the grounds on Saturday night. Just, you know, enjoying it, but as well, it's one of those cases talking to some of the players and the coaches after the game. It's just being about producing that consistently. That's the problem. Like, they showed the ability that they can do. I mean, nothing, and I'm not taking anything away from the Force. I think the Drua, they were really spooked and overawed in that first half. It took them a while to hit the gears, and I thought that there was a chance in that second half they were going to come back into it slowly. They produced some brilliant rugby. They were 10 minutes into that second half, and the Drua were peppering their line. Nick White was yellow carded, and they were only 7 points behind. But then Force ended up going length of the field, hacking the ball downfield and getting a scrum at the other end, eventually scoring, and that just kind of took the wind out of the Drua's sails. So it's something that it's the way that everyone wants to see the Force play, and we are just all hoping that they can reproduce it on Saturday night.
And Mitch Donaldson was very good.
Yeah, and I think that this is the sort of the confidence that we want to see from the Force when they're playing at home, which, you know, that game on the weekend and the Reds before that, they came out, they played a good pace game, they were accurate with their pass, accurate at the breakdown. But what was really a big clincher of that game and where they completely dominated is their hustle and bustle in defence and at the breakdown. So their line speed off the line to really shut down the Fijian players, and also their hustle in the breakdown to really make a mess of it. I thought that was a very good tactic, and they stuck to that right through until basically Fiji ran out of puff. Fiji, for mine, appeared very flat. They ran out of options. When that space was taken away from them, they sort of ran out of those options. And the young 10 from Fiji, who's done pretty well this year, sort of didn't have that plan B up their sleeve to then defer to say, okay, this is how this opposition's playing against us. We need to go to this other game plan. So, and that to mine is probably epitomises where Fiji Drua have been at this year. They've had some fantastic wins, in particular at home, but when they've been challenged in games, they haven't had that default game plan that they can defer to get through the tough parts of games. And, you know, that's been an undoing, and that could be the reasons why they may not make the eight in the end. But, you know, Western Force, as I said in the tips last week, Nick, would have loved to have picked them, but just don't trust them.
Yep.
because they've just been too inconsistent with the way they played. And yes, there's some shining lights. Carlo again, very, very good. Kunzel going back to 13 was good there. And, you know, they just had a night out where they just clicked and were able to produce something that we've only seen twice this year.
Yeah. And you talk about Tizano. Will he be invited to a Wallaby camp, surely, on form?
Oh, stop it, Mick.
Do you think he should be included in a Wallaby camp?
No, as much as I like him, and I think he's probably, if you're picking a Nathan Sharp medalist now for the Force, he'd be top of my list.
So what's holding you? What's holding him back?
Oh, I just don't think he has that. Well, he certainly doesn't have the attack game that we used to, even though he scored the odd try this year. It's very close range and very opportunistic, close to the line, the tries that he scored. He hasn't been that connector piece in attack between backs and forwards that you probably want from a back row. Like, he does a lot of work, but if you're going to go to that next level, you've got to be able to move bodies and move big bodies and bigger bodies, and you've got to be able to also play with the footy, which I know Carlo can do, but we just haven't seen that aspect of his game. And I just think, you know, he is playing at maximum capacity at the moment, in my view. Is there room for development? Possibly, but for mine, the Fraser McWrights of this world are still, you know, I'd put Rory Scott ahead of him. I'd put Charlie Kale as a back rower ahead of him. I'd put Jerome Brown ahead of him. And I, you know, yeah, there's a few,
just purely,
a few
just guys. Purely for that physical body side. Like I, yeah, it was this time
also
last year.
To attack as well, Heath.
Yeah, like Fraser McWright has got the attack, but like he showed last year how difficult it can be to go that next level, especially as an open side flanker. Like he was a boy playing against men when he started at seven against the Springboks last year. Like they just absolutely monstered him, and he went, and it shows how different it is playing in that in a Super Rugby competition to then going and playing test match footy. So as much as we do want, you know, teams need to be picked on the guys that are in form and playing the best rugby, like it's, you know, it's like Ferg said before as well, he just figures he's never going to be international lock because he hasn't got that frame as an international lock. It doesn't matter what he's putting in, week out. There's other things that they take into consideration, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think Jeremy Williams showed what he can offer. I still think Jeremy Williams is a bit of a bolter. I still think
has he got the physical dimensions for a lock?
Well, I think he falls into that. He falls into like the Jed Holloway category there as well, where like Jed's played as a lock for the Waratahs. He's played as a lock for the Wallabies as well, but was used almost purely more in the back row at Wallaby level. So being able to cover both, just having that potential to do. And I think that's where Jeremy Williams is, like, you know, being able to have that Swiss Army knife individual. I think he has got some claim, and that's if he can finish off the season well. Like, he started well, or he missed some time at the beginning, but he has worked his way back in. But I think, like, he's got that bigger frame so they can afford to play him somewhere else in the back row and still have that, you know, that bigger body on the field to be able to wear some of those blows.
Yeah. The other kitty I really like is Horton. He's a who? Is Tommy Horton.
Yeah,
big tick to him. Like, his work rate, mobility, skills. He's working on his accuracy at line-out time and scrum time and be able to compete against the bigger bodies. But, you know, same deal. Like, all the attributes to, you'd pick him first pick, or second pick behind Carlo every week. But would you pick him in a Wallaby squad? Maybe not, because of his size. And Ryan Lonergan had the same issues when he transitioned to, you know, he was playing really good footy at the Brumbies, but when he went to transition to that next level, purely through size and pace and your all-round game, he started to struggle. So, you know, Horton's the other one that you could probably say, yeah, fantastic season, but where to for here for him?
Yeah.
He has Tom Horton has been in the Wallaby squad, in the Wallaby setup before. I think it was back in 2021 before he went overseas at the Waratahs. So he has been in around the setup. So they have looked at him from that point of view. I think because I feel like especially in Australia anyway, they are looking at a lot more mobile hookers as well. And it's kind of what is available. That's like Matt Faisler, the Queensland Reds hooker, is one of the front runners. And I think one of the big things is, and it's the reason Jordan Ulisi down at the Rebels has been able to, like, be involved in a Wallaby setup so long, is just because of the size that they bring, like being able to have that physical attribute. Whereas, you know, you look around the Brumbies, most of their hookers are, no one's overly big. They're all mobile, quick, can get around the park. And I think, you know, Tom Horton is that guy and then some as well. And like you said, Mitchie, his line-out accuracy has improved this year. There was an Achilles heel for him. That was it. But it's improved out of sight. And, yeah, you get so much from him around the ball. And it started at the beginning of the year just on the defensive side. But I feel like the attacking side of him has really opened up, being that little bit of a link man in the wide channels, like we saw him put Carlo away down that short side on the weekend, just linking through. So, yeah, we've got to be due to be putting a Wallabies 15 together sometime soon on the podcast. We're probably,
not far away.
Or is that a teaser?
could be.
Start penciling names in. Let's get the pencil out. The Eddie Jones pencil. Let's resurrect it. Start penciling.
Yeah. We will start thinking about that. Now, just moving quickly through the other matches last week, I'll go through them. We can come back to them. So the Brumbies 29-21 over the Tars. Highlanders 32-29 over the Crusaders, the Blues in a ripper 31-27 over the Hurricanes, and the Reds 26-22 over the Rebels, and then the Chiefs 43-7 over Moana. But there were some good games in that round, and none better than the Blues Hurricanes game.
Yeah, Mickey, that was a top two game. If ever we saw one, it was a really good tussle between two very good teams. And yeah, like there was some very good performances all round from both the Hurricanes and the Blues. And for the Blues to get the chocolates in the end was an outstanding win for them, and just shows that they're real contenders for the title at the end of the year. And probably just expose the Hurricanes just a little bit, even though the Hurricanes have been on a roll. You know, it just shows that they can be beaten on any given day, and then they're going to have a really tough run. Well, both those teams will have a really tough run against other Kiwi teams leading into the next few weeks.
I thought their winger John Morby. I reckon the Hurricanes could have got away with that because there was a try that he had. They, I think, who was it? Caleb Clark, I think it was. Bundy been in touch. He needs to watch a bit of the rugby league wingers dotting that ball down
Oh, yeah, jump, gun over
on
the
the
top.
touchline, because he kind of
Yeah.
went sort of went in normal and Caleb Clark cleaned him up. So
He's got to add a bit of razzle dazzle.
yeah, it was interesting. And then just I mean, just because they're Australian, the Brumbies over the Tars. Jeez, it was very wet. At the
Oh,
back end of that game.
horrendous game, Mickey. My
They
God.
spent most of the time just trying to figure out who was on whose team.
I know,
And
it's the same
Mickey,
marketing people that let
what
Nedland spray
jerseys?
pally
What
in blue jerseys. They had
are we
Brumbies and Tars
thinking,
in
letting
white.
two teams run out in
I
white jerseys and
know.
blue shorts?
Yeah.
Where did we get that idea from?
Oh, I don't
In
know.
the wet and the mud as well. So
Yeah,
it's just,
just
it was a
complete.
debacle. And
It was
I
bizarre.
think the referee lost the plot too. Like 20 minutes to go, I reckon the referee couldn't see who had the ball because the amount of stuff he started to miss was ridiculous. The knock-ons and offsides, it was just play on, play
Yeah,
on.
let it go. Let it go.
Yeah. But yeah, the Brumbies had just done enough before the downpour, I think, just to get themselves enough in front to protect their lead and take the game. But yeah, not a pretty game in the end.
And then test for you, the Reds 26-22 the Rebels. It was just a rolling whose rolling line out more could score the most tries.
It was just glorious, wasn't it, Mitchie? Mitchie,
I
it
think I
was
switched that one off after the third.
a beautiful
No,
image.
well, and but oh, you know, Rebels just kind of showing that, like they are gonna trouble teams, especially as we get towards this back end of the year. Like they haven't got like a team list like some of the other teams, but you know what Kevin Foote and Nick Stiles must be doing down there. They have got a good tight group of guys who are playing hard for each other, and everything that's going on off the field, like the effect it can have, it can draw away, but it can also galvanize a group quite tightly as well. So, you know, we're seeing them probably perform better than anticipated, and it's got them still sitting at sixth, or I think they're sixth on the ladder, 3 rounds to go. If you said the Rebels are going to be playing finals at the end of the year,
Yeah.
you would have got some pretty good odds on it.
They're in the eight. They're in the eight. And
They're
the
coming sixth, I think.
Highlanders Crusaders game was a good game, I thought, Mickey.
Was
But
quite
that
late,
was
wasn't it?
seventh playing
Oh,
11th or
32
whatever.
against, yeah, 29. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that was a good game. I felt sorry for the Crusaders in the end. I'm actually starting to feel sorry for them now.
Oh, don't.
So I
Don't.
saw they had 54% possession. They conceded 13 penalties to six. And poor Rob Penny, he's actually apologised to the fans. That was their ninth loss out of 11 matches. That's a record, one more than their previous record of eight that they suffered in their very first season back in 1996. So things not going well. We talk
That's the
about the
death.
Waratahs, but geez, the Crusaders, my
That's the
goodness.
death knell, isn't it? When you are apologising to your fans,
Yeah. Yeah,
that's big
not
trouble.
ideal. And then in the Pac Four, the Canadian women 33 defeated the Wallaroos 14. I had a look at that game. Canadians really strong up front, but great to see Sammy Wood and Petra Barb, Malcolm Hickey getting their first test, which was terrific for them.
Yeah, the Canadian pack were very strong, Mickey. I thought they were very clinical and pretty much out muscled us and out skilled us in their front eight. And the Wallaroos, even though it was a plucky performance, but the Canadians were very good.
Yeah,
Thoroughly
really good.
deserved the win.
Yeah. And then in the Fortescue
Led
Premier Grade.
by Western, well,
Yeah.
not captained by, but up front there as well, Sarah
Taylor, yeah.
Klein, Western Force, Hooker as well, playing for the Canadian team.
Oh, was
Ah,
she?
yes, yes,
Mm-hmm.
yes.
There you go.
I did hear a mention of that in the
There
commentary.
you go. And then looking at the Fortescue Premier Grade round four, some really close ones, which was great. UWA 28 just sneaking over the Roodogs 25. Tackling optional with Nettie sneaking home 49-46. Over the Southern Lions. You'd think if you could score 46 points against Nettie, you'd come away with the Chockies. But great to see Southern Lions looking competitive in the early stages. Pally too strong for Perth, 46-26. Cot 24. Soaks Oh, what was it? 2020? I can't even think of the
I
score
turned
now.
that one off, boys. It was 9-6 at half time. They were exchanging penalty goals. I'm going, what's going on?
Yeah, it wasn't
Did they start scoring tries in the end, did they?
well, not a lot. Not a
No,
lot.
one or two each.
I should remember that score. And then Joondalup 41 defeating Kalamunda 27. Because it was tied. Maybe it was 20-24 or 21-17. I can't remember. It was tied up until
24-19 to Cobbers, though.
24-19. There you go. 24-19. Yeah.
Right, so the
So
Soaks have suffered their first defeat.
yes. So Cot, yeah. So
Right.
Cot now
Okay.
out on their own in the on the competition. So then heading into this week. Now, before we get into tipping time, the ladder in Super Rugby. So as you mentioned, the Blues now on top on 45, Hurricanes on 43, Brumbies 39, and the Chiefs 38. That's your top four. The Reds in fifth on 31. Rebels in sixth on 25, Highlanders in seventh on 23, and the Drua in eighth on 17. But right behind them in ninth is the Force on 15, Minor Pacifica on 14 with the Crusaders, and the Waratahs in 12th spot on 12. So going into this week, tipping time, Canes against Moana.
Canes, that's an easy one.
That's an
Yeah,
easy one.
that's an easy one.
Rebels against Chiefs,
That's
sixth
another easy
versus
one.
fourth. That's an easy one.
Yeah,
Yes, Chiefies.
Chiefs.
Chiefs. And the possibility is that this match could be their last ever game at Amy Park for the Rebels,
Oh,
depending on
right.
what.
Yeah, because they finish on two aways, do they?
And yeah, two aways. And then if they're around next year, they're talking about moving them out to
Moving out
wherever it was.
west
And
to
apparently
Melbourne.
hadn't paid rent for a year at Amy Park anyway.
Yeah.
And then and Damien McKenzie is playing Mitch, so that will seal
Yeah,
that
well, there's
anyway.
another 20 points you can add.
And then the Drua up against the Reds. So eighth versus fifth.
Oh,
Siliasu Vunivalu, he's back in the starting side.
they're back at home
Oh,
as well. They're
God's
back at
sake.
home,
Yep,
Mitchy.
Drua back at home. Drua.
Fiji back at home? Oh,
Yep.
all day. Go Drua.
All day.
Yeah.
Then we. I'll tip the Reds.
Oh, yeah, you and
Okay. Just
Suliassi
to
can
be that
go
guy.
the
Just to
whole
be
hands.
that guy. For no, bro, the only reason is that I'm going to tip the Force to beat the Tars, and that'll put the Force in the top eight. But if the Drua win, then the Force don't get into the top eight.
Oh, I
Then we
see.
got the so who was that
Brumbies.
one? What was that one? Oh, the Brums against Crusaders.
Yep.
Oh, see, they're usually really
No,
good
that's the
games. Like
Brumbies.
I know the Brumbies will win, but they're usually cracking games. Yeah,
Historically,
I'm going Brumbies,
in
but
2024, yeah. historically the Crusaders aren't coming 11th on the ladder as
Yeah.
well. That's
Correct. So you're going the Brums, Tess?
Yeah, I'm going the Brums.
The Brums.
Watch the Crusaders go and bump them now.
Then the Blues against the Highlanders, 1v7.
Nah, Blues.
Yeah, I think it was the last time. This is how good I am at tipping. Last time the Highlanders played the Blues was in Melbourne in that Super Round, and I said, "Geez, there's some cracks showing in that Blues team. I don't know how they're going to be going at the back end of the year. Hollanders are going to come good." So
Nah, it's this
I'm
time of
going to
year where
stick
all
them.
it's this time of year where all the Kiwi teams, they don't miss a beat now.
They go
From
up
here
a
on in,
gear
they
now.
go up a year every
Yeah.
week. Yep.
Especially all those big stars at the Blues. So yeah, the Blues will beat the Hollanders at home.
And then the final match on Saturday at 5:35 Western time is the Western Force against the Waratahs. So the Force lineup, again, pretty consistent. Harry Hupert, Tom Horton, Santiago Medrano, Jeremy Williams and Isaac Ryder in the second row, Will Harris, Carlo Tozzano, and Reid Prinsep in the back row, Nick White and Ben Donaldson, the 9-10, Chase Tiatia and George Pullen on the wings, Hamish Stewart, Bailey Kunzel in the centres, and Kirtley Beale at fullback. And on the bench, Filiti Koutou, Marley Pearce, Tian Tauakapulu, Lapeti Fifua, Michael Wells, Isaac Fiennes, Laliawasa, Sam Spink, and Henry O'Donnell. So Force v Tars, who's going to get up?
Well,
Oh,
we
it's
know
got to be us, doesn't it?
he's
Well,
going for the Force.
is
It's
it
got to be
ninth
us,
versus
surely.
12th? I just
Well,
want to. What color blues are they wearing? That's
I
all I
didn't
want
pick
to
them
know.
last week and they won. So I just don't think it's right that an Australian team should come last. So let's go and get the Tars off the bottom, put the Crusaders on the bottom this week.
So you reckon that's where? Okay, all right. So you're going for the Tars.
Yes, I am. Just
Unbelievable.
to annoy Heath.
Unbelievable.
Tess, you're staying solid on the Force.
Rock solid.
Rock solid.
I
And
got.
the
I
rock
think the
solid.
Waratahs have got no chance of winning, by the way. But I'm going to go for them because I think they need a little bit of support. Because I'm feeling sorry for them
We had Ferg on tonight. Like he's just such a good
Yeah,
bloke.
I just feel sorry for him.
Then in the other games this weekend, the Pack Four on Friday, 2:55 at Amy Park. So it must be a double header before the Melbourne Rebels game down there. The Wallaroos are playing the USA. The USA lost 57-5 last week to the New Zealand Women's. Sammy Wood starting at 9, which is great. And then the 17-year-old Caitlin House makes a bit of history. She breaks the record for the youngest ever Australian to play a test match, male or female. 17 years, 242 days when she starts at fullback against the Americans. Michaela Leonard, skipper, Trillian Pomeroy named at 12, and Hedda Bubb on the bench. But big moment, 17.
Is that the young Waratah fullback?
Waratah player?
Yeah, Waratah fullback. Yeah, yeah.
She can play.
She can play, but it's, you know, that's a young kid, isn't it? 17 and a bit. Out there playing test match footy. So,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, good on her. Hope she's
I'll back her in for a try on debut. How's that?
There you go. And then the Premier Grade, Kalamunda versus Perth. That's the stand game. Heath Tessman, we think, will be somewhere watching that one. West up against Nettie's, Pally against Joondalup, Cot against UWA, and Wanneroo up against Soak. So plenty on this weekend.
Well, the Cot UWA game would be a good game.
Should be, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Who are you guys doing again? Kala someone?
Kala Perth.
Kala Perth.
Oh, yeah. That'll have a bit of feeling in it.
Out
at Kala. And West Indies as well. We'll have a bit.
You'll be in the garage calling it again, Mick.
I'm actually away this week, so Heath's Heath's in charge.
Heath's going to be in the garage.
Nice. Yeah, Heath's
just loving it.
In the garage, yeah. We're all loving
it. Hey, and the Aussie 20s too, Mickey. The other game we missed out was the Aussie 20s went down to the Kiwis last weekend, and it was the most bizarre circumstance. I don't know if you guys caught it, but the winner of the game actually won the Four Nations Championships, but we lost, so we came last. But if we won, we would have come first.
Really?
Yeah.
Because everyone had beaten everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And they were saying, have New Zealand unveiled some new hot try scorer? Didn't some kid score? No, I read something about the Kiwis.
Well, they were okay. But, yeah, apparently. You know, there was no Jonah Lomas running around.
Yeah, okay.
No Jonas out there.
There you go.
No. Who's the? Wasn't it one of the young blokes made the team of the tournament as well?
Hang on a sec. So that takes us to the mailbag.
Well, I thought you'd skipped over the 20s.
No. And Western Forceback, Ronan Lee, has been named the under-20 rugby championship team of the tournament. He had three strong showings with the under-20s on the Sunshine Coast. So he plays his club rugby with UWA, started all three games at inside centre and played all 240 minutes. That was.
I'll back that. He had a good tournament. Yeah.
And, he's one of the guys we've been calling for. Or I have been calling for to get an opportunity this year. Like he played in that Toyota Cup challenge that the Force had against the Cheetahs back end of last year. Did really well in that competition. Like played brilliant. I think he spent more time on the wing in the tournament than in the centres. But good young footy player. Looking forward to seeing more of him over here in the West.
Because it was interesting, listen to Simon Cron today, one thing he spoke about was that the gap between club rugby and super rugby, he said it's just too big. And they're very hesitant to throw young people in and just bust them. So it's, and that's another point I'll get to at the bottom of the mailbag. Other bit of news, Waratahs, and also Kalamunda forward Dane Sawyers. He was finished third overall for carries in that under 20. We love their stats on this show. Waratahs halfback Jake Gordon, he signed until the end of 2025, plays his 100th game this week against the Force. He's asked Rugby Australia and the Waratahs for an early release to go and play in France, but they've said no. You're staying.
What are you doing looking for a job when you got one?
Yeah, I just think he's thinking one of the things is they're saying now with the lingering uncertainty over the future of the Rebels, people aren't sure where players are going to go, who's going to end up where, and he wasn't part of the World Cup last year. Still on the top up, so he might be thinking, "Oh, look, if I get squeezed out, I might as well go and go somewhere different." So,
It doesn't hurt asking the question. Worst you can do is say no, which they have.
So they've done that. So we're another year on to him. Yeah. And then we always talk about having close games on Saturday in the Gallagher Premiership, which is the Premiership in the UK, the high end professional thing. Northampton defeated Gloucester 90-0.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. 14 unanswered tries.
In a first division game.
By the Northampton Saints. Yeah. 90-0. Jesus. What's going on there? Bit of a mess.
Gloucester's in a poo, aren't they?
Yeah. And then just an article I read today, Brett McKay in Rugby Pass, he was just talking about the Australian talent in the back three. So at the Waratahs next year, there's going to be Andrew Kellaway, who's coming from the Rebels. They'll have Max Jorgensen, Dylan Peach, Tristan Riley. Tom Wright's playing well. Jock Campbell's playing well. Corey Tootle's playing well. You've got Jordan Petaia, Lockie Anderson, Darby Lancaster, Tim Ryan also. And the question was raised, will Joseph Suoli'i get a, will he get a start somewhere?
Playing the centres.
Well, is he a centre though? Because they said...
I'll turn him into one. Yeah,
doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't turn him into a 13. Yeah, I don't reckon. Make him into a, turn him
you reckon
into a
that's what they'll try and do? Isn't that meant to be difficult? Isn't that meant to be a difficult place to defend? I don't know why people say that, but that's what I've heard. Because they're saying in rugby league on the wing.
You know how hard it is to defend on the wing, Mick, in rugby?
There's only...
Jesus.
No.
Yeah, you're understating wingers again. Like, we do a lot of work, us wingers. Like, it's underappreciated. You just think anyone can play a wing. Well, it's look how hard it is to get a wing spot. Look at all those players.
Yeah.
Nah, you'll have to play 13.
You reckon? But, okay.
Well, give me three good 13s at the moment that are
Australian. Well, it was in the article. I didn't write them down.
Yeah. Other than Lenny at the Brums.
What about Hunter Paisami? Hunter Paisami? Is he a 13?
He's a 12. He's more of a 12 than a 13.
Yeah, okay.
So you got Josh Fluke.
Yep.
Yeah, he's okay. Sam Spink's not going to be around, so Bailey Kunzel.
Yeah,
he's okay. So 13's the way to go. They're Fichetti. Yeah. Fichetti at the Tars or old mate with the broken nose, Joey Walton.
So you reckon Parisi's leaving? 13.
Yeah, Sueli. Yeah, 13. That's where he's going to have to play.
To get a game.
He's getting a bag of money. He doesn't have to get to choose his position as well.
Yeah, that's true. But will it be a hard transition for him?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Right.
Absolutely, Mick.
All right. Interesting to see how it goes. And then the thing talking about with getting young players up. So Stephen Hoyles was talking about the flaws in the academy system, saying that it's mostly under 20, but it should be under 25, under 26, which we've spoken about, and I agree with filling that gap. And he was talking about all the props going down at the Waratahs, saying if they're playing 40, 50 or 60 minutes, then they're forced to play 70, 75, 72. You're redlining them, they break down. Is conditioning an issue? Because I thought, isn't rugby an 80-minute game? Shouldn't players be conditioned to play 80 minutes?
Absolutely. You should be able to play 80 minutes. Like, I know props have got it really tough and they do more work than any other player on the field, but...
Why are you rolling your eyes while you say that?
Surely they can be conditioned to play 80 minutes.
Yeah, because if we're playing players 70 minutes.
Is it
talking about the young guys coming through being conditioned?
No,
to
maybe
withstand the rigors of
this whole woke thing that's crept into rugby that people get subbed off after 40 minutes or 60 minutes because, you know, they load it out and all this sort of stuff. It was the props that started that rubbish. And now they're paying the price.
When we were playing at the beginning, you're only allowed one front row reserve.
Yeah.
We're slowly just building more and more.
Yeah.
So is
props
it
only have to worry people... about playing half a game this way this time, so they only do half the work. They only do half the work, therefore they break easier.
So
they're the new winger. They're the new wingers of this world.
So, it's interesting. Yeah. It's even this. I mean, the crickets.
We're the Ferraris.
The crickets are the same where they rest.
I think what he's not talking about, like, so much the conditioning, being conditioned to be able to undertake, like, week in, week out Super Rugby in the front row, because it is a demanding position, like, as well as, you got to run fast like a winger, but then you're also getting your spine compressed and having to squat big, large amounts of weight and having all this pressure through your body, as well as then having to get up and, tackle a fast winger coming at you. So, like, I think that building that conditioning isn't something that you just build over, pre-season, especially if you're a young person coming in to a professional program. Like, talking about, like, I still remember, like, Richie Arnold, when he came to us at the Force, when he first came, he'd never been in a professional program before. And at the time, Will Markwick was the S&C, and he essentially said, it's going to be 2 years, maybe even 3 years, before we can train him hard enough to be able to withstand week in, week out. And he spent nearly the first year at the Force injured because they tried to rush him in.
Yeah.
And then it was by the end of that second season, after sitting out nearly the whole Super, and he played a lot of the NRC, which then got him some more of the game time in a row, like continuous game time before then in that 2017 season, he was able to play more consistently week in, week out. And I think because especially the Tars, they're cherry picking these guys from club rugby, and you know they're plumbers or students or whatever through the week. Like they can't, their bodies aren't fully conditioned. They're conditioned to go out and knock around for Manly on the weekend and train twice and drink 16 schooners after the game. Like they're all good to go for that, but you know it's like what Crono said as well. Like there's a big gap between that club game and going up to that super level, and one of the most evident places it is different is you can take one of the most athletic forward packs anywhere, but you take the best scrum in any club competition in the world and put them against one of the worst scrums in a super game comp. They're going to get belted.
Yeah.
Because they just haven't got that conditioning. They haven't got that kind of hardness that just comes with week in, week out, constant training and constantly addressing, you know, weaknesses. So it's, I mean, that's the problem is that, you know, it's missing that third tier, so we haven't got that gap. So the guys can make, it's not, you know, it's not a huge big step up. It's only a smaller step to get them up and ready so they can just step in and be playing consistently without risk of injury, I guess.
Yeah, and that is a flaw. That gap there is a massive problem, as we've seen this year. And I don't know how they, apart from having money to be able to pay these guys to be in that older academy, so they are training with the squad and getting exposed to that sort of stuff. I don't know what the answer is, but it's not working the way it's going at the moment. So interesting. Anyway, look, that'll do us. Thank you, Mitch. Thank you, Tess. Good to see Ferg.
Thanks, gents.
Good to hear from Daniel.
Yep, good little perspectives on things. We'll see what happens next with the Rebels saga.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Daniel as well for putting his hand up to come on.
Yes.
And and enlighten all of us. Yep. Or at least us, anyway.
Exactly. Thanks for sharing the spreadsheet, Mick. I'm sure you didn't know what you were looking at there.
No, I didn't.
Came straight.
I'm no good on Excel, but there was lots of numbers on there and lots of minuses next to a lot of those numbers too.
A lot of numbers in red.
What does it mean when they're in red down the line?
Not really good. But thanks for having me for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Rugby Wrap.